Namaste. So, Dr. Roshni, welcome again. And you are the person who is representing the youth of today. And I am representing the older generation. So, basically how you see and how we understand the influence of social media. We didn't have. We had radio and transistor. And even to have a radio was a big thing. And just to put it in perspective, and we used to have that needle, based on that, the stations will catch, and songs and news was the only thing. That time, the news which we were told reliable news is BBC.
Mm.
And we were fooled into believing that what comes from BBC must be correct. So we didn't realize that narratives are being built and opinions are being shaped. But that time, that's how it was. And even songs and movies, narratives were being given. You know, we didn't realize.
Mm.
It's much later we began to discover, for example, that how a particular community was portrayed, how another community was portrayed. The songs themselves, the whole game of narrative started long back.
Mm.
And now, of course, over a time, losing many things and struggling to understand the whole play, it's become very clear that, you know, opinions are being shaped. I belong to a generation, at least I was fortunate enough, I don't know about the generation, that I used to think for myself that, well, whatever people may say, I must have my own views about everything. But now I think there is a very strong impact on opinion forming.
Mm.
And people just pick it up and automatically they like they eat it and often undigested vomit it out. So maybe you can start with your views and what do you feel about it?
I think now, like you say, because there's such a upsurge of who gets access to any platform, there's so many people out there now doing podcasts, doing propaganda episodes on YouTube, Snapchat, Instagram, TikTok, all platforms. And they're having millions and millions of followers. And it's really hard to discern when five people are talking about the same subject in five different lights, which is truth and which is falsehood. So how do you kind of navigate that problem of going through this world of people with millions and millions of followers, with people who are just propagandizing the wrong thing with so
yes,
many people?
I'm glad you mentioned, because the sign of truth nowadays is the number of followers.
Yeah.
Shobindu was once asked about it, just to put, it's in another context, but it makes something very similar. He was asked that it seems that the followers of your yoga are much less, much lower in number than, say, for instance, he gives example, I think it was Niruddha, but he says examples of Christianity, Buddhism, etc. And one line of Sri Aurobindo, he explains that, but that one line is so powerful in its impact. He says, nothing depends on numbers. And I'll give you another example which I used to feel and used to share with my friend Chutnarayan Sharma. I mentioned him several times. So he would say that, well, a million stars in the sky and as many or more candlelights, as many candlelights cannot equal to a single sun. So I personally feel that this idea that, you know, how many followers is itself very misleading, because truth is not decided by numbers. Truth is truth even if nobody in the world believes in it. That's the beauty of truth. So when often people speak about, you know, religions, oh, this religion has so many followers. Sometimes I asked, truly, how many followers? Followers means somebody who is living that truth. That's always very rare and very, very few. So I feel this itself, that truth is depends on the number of people who believe in it or even follow it for that matter. Well, truth doesn't depend on that. It shines, is there forever, even if no one sees it. I could go on multiplying the examples, but this is the fundamental reality. For instance, take one example of God. Now, people have debated since the time human beings began to think. And till date, you will see people continue to debate. But regardless of all the debates, all the ways people have built philosophies, religions, their good and their evil side, the point is that human consciousness is always engaged with its discovery of God. So that's how the life divine starts, that the earliest preoccupation of man. So I think it's something which, and I'm not even talking of the artificial boost of numbers. That's a different, probably you would know. I really don't know, but I have heard about it, that how these numbers are boosted artificially. With the help of AI, you can do many things.
I mean, you can pay to get it boosted nowadays.
You can get a?
You can pay to get it boosted.
Okay, can I understand? Because many of our people, I don't really know it exactly, but
yeah.
I've heard about it. Yeah.
So when you upload a video on, for example, TikTok or Instagram, on Reels, you can, there's an option called Boost, which means you can pay to get a boost in views or a boost in, I don't know, suggesting it on the explore page for people to click on it. And automatically, the more people that interact with the video, it has an exponential effect. Because once you reach a certain threshold, then it will appear on every, and that's how virality starts.
Right.
So when something goes viral, then automatically people assume that it holds a certain truth because millions of people are interacting with this one video. And if someone counters it with the opposite idea, they would only get 100 views, 200 views. So who's going to think that?
Yeah, so it's true? A mass effect and a cascading effect.
There's a call centers in India.
Yeah. So we can, you know, this is something, even when I heard it, I didn't quite understand the technicality. Mm. But I said that, look here, how misleading it can be. And as you said, once you cross a threshold, then it gets more and more circulated. Therefore, sheer random chance. Mm. Many people will view it simply because it's appearing again and again.
Mm. But the problem is when they spread, one of the main, we were talking about preoccupations of youth nowadays is body image. And body image is a huge problem now, and it leads to such terrible health issues, psychologically, physically. And it almost becomes what people worship and center their life around, how they look physically.
The zero figure.
Size zero, yeah.
Size zero.
So now there's two sides of the story. One is that people are becoming preoccupied to look size zero. And the other extreme is people vouching for unhealthy obesity in the name of body positivity. And there's no balance, it seems, between maintaining a good body health and then propagandizing the exact opposite of eat whatever you want, look however you want. So what do Mother and Sri Aurobindo say about the body?
So before that, let me share an experience about my first visit to London, long back, 2006 or something, and I went to the washroom on the airport and I saw a weighing machine there. And I was wondering, who would keep a weighing machine here? I mean, who would want to check your weight? Now, over years, I understood, because there was, when I was doing my psychiatry, there is a disease which was supposed to be mainly found in UK and that part of the world. And you must be knowing anorexia nervosa.
Yeah.
And now I see so many patients, and it's so sad to see young girls, particularly girls, they are actually, they get stunted growth because they are not eating well, because they have this idea, and it is being fed by various ways. For example, along with that will come what kind of diet you should follow.
Yeah.
Cholesterol is harmful. Now, you know, as a doctor, you know that you need cholesterol for the body. Harmful is when it crosses, it's not like everybody who eats a little ghee is going to die of a heart attack. So there is this idea which is completely misinformation and anorexia nervosa. I have seen, and it's been so difficult, some patients I myself dealt with. And I think that on one side is the, this is of course dangerous and harmful. And on the other side being excess indulgent. So when we come to Mother and Sherbindo, I mean, if you ask me which is more harmful, if you ask me, I feel anorexia nervosa is definitely more harmful.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, because not only because of the physical and physiological and biological effects, but also the idea of being preoccupied with body image. That comes later, that about the food you are eating and the illness. This is called in Indian thought as Deha Atma Bodh. So Deha Atma Bodh means your life is centered around the body. And again, I am resisting the temptation to tell a story because it's a podcast. The asuras.
I'd like to hear.
I know. But the asura, Virochan and Indra both go to Brahma and they want to know the self. So Brahma says, look into my eyes and you'll find the self. So both see and they both go back. So what do you see in the eye? Virochan sees himself reflected, his body. So does Indra. So Virochan says, basically Brahma is trying to tell us, hey, look here, why are you engaging in all this search for self and all, when this is given to you, this body, this is yourself. What is this complicated? He has told us in a nice symbolic way. But Indra contemplates on it. It says that, well, what he has heard is self is something stable. But this is constantly changing. How can something which is changing be eternal? So he uses his mind. So he goes back to Brahma and says, please, there is something which I have missed, or probably you have conveyed something else. So he says, okay, good, you look again. So he looks and he discovers the vital. And so it goes on. And as the story goes, several times, and until he discovers, his true self in the eyes of the creator. So we're not going to Brahma being a creator, not creator, whatever it is. So basically there have been two kinds of parallel thoughts about human nature and human constitution. One is that basically it's nothing but nature, and in this nature, whatever is visible, tangible, this is real. And so when you focus on whatever is visible and tangible, you are more and more imprisoned in the senses. So you are all the time feeding the sensory, how to even makeup. I'm sorry, but often I have felt that makeup means, what are you trying to make up? Something is amiss. So, often when people speak about, I quote this story of Bertrand Russell, that, he was invited to a famous party and the lady told him, dignitaries will be coming, so please wear a nice suit, because he was known for his casual dressing. So he goes there with a nice suit, and when he served an ice cream, he starts putting it on his G.B. Shaw, sorry, not Bertrand Russell. So he started putting it on his coat, and people said, what are you doing? You don't know how to eat an ice cream. He said, no, but you see, the coat is more important than myself. So I am feeding it because this is what my worth is. So it is not just about looks. It is about looks, which is about everything. The kind of car, the kind of house, it's like projecting and presenting yourself, being more and more presentable. Now this is a whole world of falsehood. It can go to any extent. It goes to this extent that every leader in India would instinctly wear a khadi. Because especially if it is a white khadi, it's a sign. You see it all around, cut out. That you see his life is so simple, like Gandhiji. So after wearing a khadi, he can kill someone. Because, it doesn't matter. So, it can go to any extent. And Sri Aurobindo speaks about it, that all show and sham means you're trying to project what you may not be. Like your own insecurities, fears, you're trying to cover up instead of confronting them. So definitely at even a very basic level, it's not healthy. As to Sri Aurobindo and the mother, they give the body its own place and importance. But not about looks. If you read, there's a very good, the other day we were reading, Tapasya of Beauty. which relates basically to the body.
Mm.
And if you go through their understanding of the physical culture, which is so important, one rule that they lay down, which is of course the rule for everybody, is moderation. Don't do excess in any direction, neither fasting nor overindulgence. So moderation is a very good thing. Exercise is important, but nothing has to be overdone. But more importantly, the idea of beauty.
Mm.
So idea of beauty at any level, if you go about, let's say, human character, what is beauty? So beauty is when there is a roundedness, a harmony of different elements. So let's say your thoughts, your feelings, your movements of the way life moves in you, and your physical, there is a totality or aspiration. So there is a harmony. So beauty is harmony of proportions.
Mm.
And the mother says with regard to fat people, very interesting observations she makes. It's in the playground when one of the ladies goes to do pranam to her. And suddenly her sari slips. And the mother notices a corpusculent, a belly which is, you know, holding. You know, belly is the storehouse of vital energy. So she sees that, and then later on she says, oh, so much of rotten and perverted things. And then she says, it's not about being fat. There are people who are corpusculent but very beautiful. But there are people who carry a lot of perversity inside. And she says, like a prayer of the Vedas, a prayer rose in my heart, that may all this disappear. And then she says, this is a very perverted approach. She even goes on to say, it's a kind of humanity which is like an abortive attempt at being human. And all this will disappear, she says, in so many words.
Mm.
There's a whole prophecy she makes that a part of humanity which is aborted attempt, where it's only focused on the body and trying to project and carrying, harboring all that is wicked, vile, and dark, and lying, deceit, all these things, is destined to disappear. So when we are focused too much on the body, we miss out on all this.
Mm.
Because we are, you know, human consciousness cannot simultaneously focus on all the elements. So if the attention is too much on the body and the appearances, you miss out on the inner psychological being, your inner development. You don't even see that, let alone spiritual development, which is a different category, because consciousness is tied to the body, and that is the real danger.
Mm.
So this body image, I understand body shaming and all that is a different domain altogether, this specialized subject. But focus on the body image, preoccupation is one of the weapons of falsehood with which it has held humanity captive to simply focusing on the physical, and thereby missing out on something deeper. And even on the physical, not in a beautiful way. You know, a harmonious body is something very nice, where there is a harmony of proportions. But it has been changed into, you know, one should look fair. Even in India, you have places where looking fair and, you know, certain parts of the body should be this way to attract. We have to understand it's an animal play, this kind of attractibility of the body.
It's gone so bad now in the West that there are certain influencers who have more followers than other people. And primarily what they are famous for is the way their body looks. And according to how they look, it's kind of laughable, but according to how that family looks, the whole Western world will change its standard of beauty. So it makes illogical sense too that now there's, for example, there'll be a trend where it's the trend to be size zero. Then there'll be a trend to get lip fillers. Then the trend will be to have thin lips. And this hypersexualizing the body is,
yes,
another huge problem in the West, that now people don't even see body as beauty. They just see it as, like you said, just an instrument to attract and,
yes,
as a matter of lust. So I think it comes down to desire and like not having an orientation as to where you're going in life. So what is beyond the appearance of obsession with each body part and hypersexualizing such a beautiful part of human life?
So I used to feel and still feel when I as a child when I would watch movies. And I would see that, you know, all the things are going on between the hero and the heroine. And somehow my mind, a thought process used to get triggered. I used to say all this is good and they feel love for each other, apparently conveying some of the most beautiful feelings. But they are both apparently by human standard looking good. What if the woman was ugly? And it may look like a joke, but I'm telling you, this used to come to my mind. What if the woman was ugly? Will the man feel the same way? And vice versa, because heroes were also portrayed as, you know, in that macho image. So I used to wonder, is this really love? But they are conveying very beautiful thing that, you know, for you I am going to die and, you know, I love you like nobody else has ever loved anyone. So I used to wonder that, is this really love or just a ploy? Yeah, so one of my very sobering experiences, I must say, was in FMC, where as a young adolescent, I was 16 and a half when I went to the medical school. So after 2 years, I used to notice, after 2 years, you are just in that phase when you can maybe, you know, have a little time because you have finished your first year, first MBBS, when you are suddenly into the thick of things and the final is yet to come, so there is a middle phase. So at night we would play and based on our interest, sometimes cards, sometimes table tennis. In between we'll take a break to have tea. And there I used to notice a couple. This memory has got very deep inside. And both of them defied the human idea of physical beauty.
Right.
So this girl was what today would, you know, say that, you know, this is hardly, I mean. But they were such a beautiful pair. Every day I would, and because we used to go every day, keeping awake late night, playing. So we would go and I used to wonder that, you know, this is how, and some of us would wait, that, oh, let's, you know, wait for them. They would come and they would not speak much. They would pick up the tea. They probably were in final year studying. So for good about an year, we saw them, used to see them come. And I understood that it's not about, I mean, I always felt intuitively that it's not about physical appearance, but it has completely distorted the idea of love. Because now people go by physical appearance. They don't even get past it to see the human being who is inside.
But the problem is that, like you say, it's just distorted. And then what happens is that a relationship gets based on how the girl looks, how famous she is, blah, blah, blah. And once the honeymoon phase is over, 3 months, 6 months, it just breaks off. And that leads to my next question, that on social media now, I mean, for many years, there's been this trend of, like, you know, one night stands and sleeping with many people and flings and all these things. So not about right or wrong or morality.
Yeah,
forget
obviously,
that.
That's not a ground.
But then what's actually
what
bad
is the problem
about,
with that? Yeah. So we'll not talk on morally right and wrong. That age is over in any case. And that doesn't really answer a question.
Yeah.
That simply puts a social society and its beliefs cannot be the determining factor about truth. But problem with one night stand and, you know, casual flings is that it drains you of the deeper aspects of emotion. So the same with pornography. So basically, that emotional being which must get deeply encased, you know, I do believe that there can be love without touch. I do believe that. And yes, it should, like for instance, sexuality. It should come as a natural consequence of love inside. It cannot be a machine. You know, it's human beings have become like a machine. And it's a joy of, I was discussing with somebody sometime back. And it was like, you know, if love moves you towards a sexual relation, is very different from sex moving you and giving it the coloring of love. First, people should be aware of that. Second, it is hyper-obsessing humanity with the idea of sex. See, this is like long back, you know, Jiddu Krishnamurti said something very interesting. And Shobindu says that in his own way. That this idea that sex is wonderful or sex is bad. So you either swing between indulging and suppressing. Instead of that, just witness it. And then you are at that particular point of time, and you know, it's a joyous extension of love. It's not something you are craving for or looking for or wanting for. It is this craving which makes it much worse than what it is. As a normal human activity, it's perfectly fine. No morality, you know, attached to it. It's a human activity when people may get, maybe, you know, moved by the power of love. It is also possible that people may get deeply attracted. It's possible. I mean, if I see in the Mahabharata, there is an instance like that. But how that evolves is something very interesting. Can I share the story?
Yeah, please.
So as the story goes, when he is on exile, Arjun is on exile. So he is on exile because he has entered into the chamber of Yudhishthir when he and Draupadi are together. And it was an understanding that when Draupadi is with one person, then nobody will enter at that point, during that phase when they are private. That's how they had managed to keep a harmonious balance. Because she had five husbands. So this is how they had kept that. Okay, 1 year she will be with this person. Everywhere they are all meeting, but when she is in a private chamber with the man, nobody else will enter. Now, if he enters, he will, as a punishment, he has to go for 1 year in exile. So Arjun comes because he has to pick up his bow and arrow because of some event which is taking place, robbers, cows, all this part. So he goes into exile. So when he goes into exile, now Arjun is a favorite in every which way. Even when you see his physical you were mentioning. Now physical description is there in Indian thought, which has its own sensuous side, but it has nothing to do with zero and white. All this is distortion in Indian thought, just as an aside. When you see the description of Lord Rama in Ramcharitmanas, so he's described as Ajanu Bhuj Shar Chap Dhari Sangram Jit Kharadush. So physical and the psychological come together. So he's, there are many descriptions. Navakanja Lochan, you know, your eyes are like that.
Translate what you just said.
Oh, yeah, I'll tell you. Somebody could probably remind me of Sri Ramachandra Kripalu Bhajaman Haran Bhave Darunam. Navakanja Lochan Kanja Mukkar Kanja Pad Kanjarunam. Everything in him like is like a lotus. His eyes are like lotus pose. His face, lips, you were talking about zero. No, lips are like a lotus pool. You know, little open, little, you know, they are like petals. And his whole body, his feet are like lotus. Now, does anyone notice the feet in sense of beauty? We don't notice nowadays that, you know, feet has their, has its own place. Yes, you do. Very good. But feet has its own place in the beauty of things.
Yeah.
Then he describes the arms and the fingers. So he says Ajanu Bhuj. So Ajanu Bhuj is somebody whose arms are touching, coming near to the knee. Now why that is important as an aspect of beauty? It says Ajanu Bhuj Shar Chap Dhari Sangram Jit Khar Dushnam. That his arms are knee length. Why? Because he is a warrior. So when he stands in the battle, he can pull the bow right up to the ears and he becomes a victor. So there is a correspondence, like the Greek idea of beauty, even physical beauty. You see here in Salarjung in Hyderabad, they have some. But also in Russia, I saw that.
But even looking like Aphrodite in Greek.
Aphrodite in Greek.
Nobody says zero.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And there is a sense of physical beauty. It's not about nudity is vulgarity. No. It's the way it is presented. So when you look at it, at that, it's a very different picture. So Arjuna goes and there is another princess who has come all the way from northeast. And she falls for him. She's attracted, actually attracted by just the physical parts of Arjuna. And she presents herself. She says, I want a baby from you. Now Arjun says, I cannot because I am married. So she says, she comes to know, she knows she's Arjun. He says, I know, but you are in exile. So he says, so what, I am still married? He says, no, that rule doesn't apply because for 1 year now you don't belong to. So she mentally convinces him. So Arjun gets convinced. But he says, this is not my life. Now see the other side of the one night stands. He says, for 1 year I will live with you. I will give you a child which you want, but then I will move because that's not my destiny. My destiny is not just to be married and have a child. This he knows deep inside. So he lives with her And 1 year, well, it may be one night. Now, look at the beauty of that relationship that is primarily physical, having a child. And then, after that child is born, who becomes illustrious warrior, Arjun moves away. Now, it may look like, oh, okay, these are stories. Sri Aurobindo has immortalized it in his poem, Ulupi. And he has immortalized it simply by, he doesn't talk about the background, it's understood. He talks about the night, the next morning Arjun has to leave. And who is sending him? Ulupi is sending him away. She says, I want to hold you. I want you to be with me forever. And Arjun also feels moved because he's a very softy, softy person. It's in his heart. He melts on the battlefield, starts crying, my grandson. He's very different. But as a warrior, he's par excellence. So he says, I feel very unhappy to leaving you. No, this not. He tries to, you know, put nice words. And then Ulupi says, no, I know, warrior, your destiny is beyond. And Sri Aurobindo has immortalized it. Please read that poem, Ulupi, is one of his, you know. So basically it's not about a one-night stand. There are movies made on that. There is something called as Damini. There was a movie made on something like that where it may happen that in certain situation or circumstances, a man and a woman suddenly came close and, you know, and met, if I may use the word, in the rawness of the flesh. For some reason. Now, should it lead to a lifelong commitment? Maybe, maybe not, depending on how you look at it. But the beauty is, was it a movement purely of a carnal, sensual desire? Now, when you have that, then it becomes a way of life. You go hunting for pleasure, you sleep. Then what is the difference between such a man or a woman and prostitution? I mean, it's just glorifying it. So it's not about how many persons came or didn't come. But what is the motive? So in Indian thought, always it's the motive. It's possible that on a particular moment, something deep from within may emerge. Another example I'll give you. Literally a one-night stand. Amazing story, Mahabharata. It's not called one night stand, but so no, these stories used to trigger a cascade of thought inside me. So the, apart from the fact that, you know, there were rishis who had two marriages, three marriages, and I used to wonder how. So, but this story is of Parashar. He's a sage, and he has to cross a river one day. The river is in sort of semi-spate and there is a boat woman. See how advanced India was. Huh? People say, oh, women were all inside. She's a boat woman. Mm-hmm. So she is plies him through across. She says, I'll take you across. And while in the boat, he uses the word inspiration, but let's come to, you know, that. Well, they both have physical relation. And he says, in any case, he's a sage and he says the child, because he is also a very developed person, he says the child who is going to come born of you will write history, and so don't abort the child, but I cannot live with you. Literally after that moment he goes away. Then as the story goes, someplace I've read, because it used to, how can he just walk away? This was pretty heartless. So once a year he used to come for a few days to the fisher people and go away. And a child was born of them. But before he did, they decide, there is a promise. And the promise is that this lady, he also gives something to this woman. That's about the interchange that takes place. So he says that from now on, anybody who smells you, you will always smell like a flower, and you will always be a virgin regardless of this. Now, I'll not go into how this is possible. Yes, it's possible. I do believe it. But not going into the science of it. So she always, you know, she ultimately falls in love with King Shantanu, or he falls in love. And then together they have, now she already has a child. Okay, then she gets married to Shantanu and has Bhishma. You know the name of the child? His name is Vedavyas. Credited with the Mahabharata, credited with a compilation of the Vedas. Vedas were not written by him, but he compiled by four rishis who came together to compile all the different suktas. credited with most of the Puranas, including the Bhagavad Puran. So it's not about morality. It's about a state of consciousness in which people engage. And that's something we have forgotten, because Western mind is focused on the act. Indian mind is focused on the motive. So motive is so important. People can get married, and Shobhinda once said that, you know, you want me to give sanction to the institutionalized sex. See, these are words in evening talks. When somebody wanted to get married, he said, you want me to give sanction to? Now, it may sound very strange, harsh, but isn't it a fact that many people were married hurriedly? Girls especially, even in India. Earlier it was the same thing in the West, before all this movement came. So that, you know, they don't conceive a child. So this idea of getting married, basically so that the sexual urge can be satisfied in both. Then once you are married, it's justified, isn't it? What do you call that? So from the motive point of view, it is as vulgar. But if there is a movement of love, which was known in Gandharva, there are so many instances, by the way, of that. I have just noted two stories randomly. And it also shows how far we were in our thought, way beyond morality, ethics, into something much greater, not below. So this idea on one side is a one-night stand, which is all driven by pleasure. Need of the body, sexual need, pick up a man or pick up a woman, and or you find somebody you casually find, you sleep over, and next day it is bye-bye. Now what happens with that? You have purely pleasure instinct which is driving you. And it is obviously very harmful, because then it's like addiction, because the pleasure is like that. It binds you, as you said, desire. So the problem is it after a while, the pleasure is gone. So you seek again. So when you seek again, you will find the way it worked. So you look for somebody, you know, and now with that permissive society, you will find plenty, you know. You'll find all kinds of advertisement and everywhere. So you find, you get hooked. So slowly you are getting hooked to what? To this pleasure seeking. And it's an endless abyss. There is a line Shrivinda uses in Savitri: libidos, bottomless well. So the more you put in, the more it'll pull you. But it is possible that, you know, sometime there could be a great movement of love. And these people in all their life probably just were together once. But it's love. It's something which has remained like an immortal stamp. For whatever reasons, society didn't sanction or whatever, they couldn't be together. So it's not the action, but the motive. And this is the problem of vulgarization of motive, and we're seeking pleasure. And that's where I find so much more. Then society takes the other swing of completely suppressing. You go swing between indulgence and suppression. And that is creating its own harmful, it's creating its own neuroticism and problems.
Just the last thing I wanted to touch on was with Instagram and social media now, I touched upon it last time, where there's a problem with cultivating concentration, because each reel is only like 30 seconds, 40 seconds. And I've experienced it myself, where before I downloaded, I refrained from it for a long time. And then I gave in and downloaded TikTok. And I was able to study for about 3 hours, 4 hours on end. But the minute I engaged in TikTok for months on end, my mind wasn't able to just sit down in one place and concentrate. And I just wanted to share a little story of a little girl that came into the GP practice. And her mother had brought her in saying that my child has anger issues. She keeps banging her head on the wall. I don't know what's wrong with her. She can't concentrate in school. And all these complaints on the child, who was about 7 or 8. And after the mother was done, I asked the child, are you like, you know, what's going on? What are you feeling? And immediately she said, I've been looking on TikTok and internet and all these things. And I think that according to this 7-year-old, that according to my symptoms, I think I have ADHD. And I was taken aback because the 7-year-old is diagnosing herself with something that is a very serious issue if it's the true thing that's going on.
Just one interruption that, as you must be aware, like this anorexia nervosa, you will suddenly see nowadays number of ADHD being diagnosed.
Yeah. And there's this issue now on social media that everybody for the most solvable issues, self-diagnosis. And when I asked this child a little bit more about what was going on, she said that she was really close to her grandmother and she had just lost her grandmother. She's not engaging in any sports. She's got a dysfunctional family at home. And just by labeling it as ADHD and putting her on something is not going to solve the root of the problem. So there's this excessive labeling of disease that's going on in social media. So I just wanted to raise that issue as well of the problem
Yes, absolutely. ADHD is one of the most overdiagnosed conditions today. That's my impression.
It is.
And people are using even medicines left and right, not addressing the real issue that your attention span is so low because your consciousness is entirely tied to the surface events. So as the famous poet, he said, no time to stand and stare. So we have lost that sense of wonder, the ability to reflect, to just stay quiet. And it's part of the family ethos. The culture should be there. And here I have two things to say. One, of course, let me just complete the topic we were discussing, lest people have a different idea. Because people talk nowadays of sex education. It's coming up in a big way. But they need to understand, they most of the time they explain it so robotically like a biological event. So if you see that this is what sex is about. But yeah, it's two personalities. It's not, you have to bring in, it's a dimension. Human beings are not just body. So whenever people talk about it, they must understand that it's not just the biological fusion of gametes and about pregnancy and people coming together and the act and the process, but something much deeper. So this is one part of it. Now coming to ADHD and this problem of attention. So we had certain things very beautiful which were part of the culture. So for instance, every evening, so we had to gather together and, you know, there was a prayer and we all sat together and then a little bit of concentration. So I suppose, you know, from childhood, children should be, it's something you have to accustom them and they pick it up. Now this idea that freedom means from a 1-year-old, whatever the child wants. So you're not equipping the child to, freedom is wonderful, but you have to be equipped. Freedom is not doing what I feel like. So unfortunately, that is being fed into the child unwittingly. So even in the school, the child is free. He wants, you know, morning I'm a boy, evening I'm a girl. You can lead your life like that. Nobody denies that. But the point is, you are ultimately giving something very big without not just responsibility. You are actually enslaving the child that whatever I feel like, wish like to do, I will do it. Instant gratification, as you said. And that's what freedom is. Now, instant gratification is what keeps the consciousness. You see, you have to buy a cloth and dress. So I've seen people, they spend, you'll be surprised, on Amazon shopping for an hour plus. 2 hours, not just 1 hour, okay? So, and when I came to know, I said, what do you do? Because idea of shopping is, you need something, you go to a shop.
Let me just share a funny thing that you told me. One time I told Alokda, he said, where's your sister? And I said, oh, she's just gone to Nehru Street to do some shopping. And he was confused, genuinely. He was like, well, what is shopping? And I said, well, people just go and browse and window shop and things. He said, but why? Why do you need to shop for something that you already have? So he just doesn't understand these things.
Yeah, I don't understand. My idea of shopping was, you need something very targeted. And it has led into problems. Since you shared a funny story, I'll share another. That you go to the shop, pick it up and come back. Don't spend so much time. So people say, no, I'm trying to see this quality, that. I said, see, these are all things which are not going to last forever. That you want everything. Okay, comfortable. Basically, it's okay. So when we just got married, 6 months into marriage, we were posted in Jorhat. There used to be only, fortunately, only one shop which was selling saris. So I thought I must take my wife and pick up saris. So she remembers it till now. So I said, okay, you pick up a sari. Show some saris. Now, first, she didn't know that I am so restless, literally, when I enter into a shop. Because looking at dresses, looking at these, I mean, your mind should... Now I'm lucky, you know, with the phone, I'm on to question answers. You know, that is my world. It's not phone, Instagram, for God's sake. But yes, there are things now, even books are on phone. So she's trying to understand and trying to see. I wanted actually to finish it fast. So I said, this is looking very beautiful. You pick up. So she said, okay, bhaiya isko rakh do. Then she went on to another. So I said, take this one also. So she looks at me, are you crazy? I said, no. See, this is looking very nice and genuinely. So I literally pushed it onto her that within half an hour, we bought two saris and I didn't ask the cost, whatever it was. So she first thought that he is so much, you know, so nice and so loving. Then she came to know it's because to go shopping is to me a nightmare. It's literally a nightmare. Even today it's a nightmare. And even not only shopping, to sit and chit-chat about things which make no sense, about family issue and this issue and that issue. People talk for hours. I sort of inwardly I shut off, but I can't be rude, so I just look, smile. Earlier I used to just concentrate inside. So basically, you know, it is so much. As you said, Amazon, 1 hour, 2 hours. Then they are browsing on some, and they don't buy anything. It's just browsing. Now I understand window shopping is one of the treatment for depression. I myself advise, because your mind is diverted and you feel happy. But this is not a real treatment. Temporarily you come out of it. So, and everything caters, which restaurant you want to go, what kind of meal is there. So it's a whole culture we have developed around catering to the palate, catering to the external body, catering to the body. And there is a passage in, if you want to understand this kind of life, you must have read. Read about kingdoms of the little life, kingdoms and godheads of the little life, and then the little mind. So Sri Aurobindo says, there is provender for the satiety of the body, but not the deep yearning of the soul, something like that. These things are provided, provender for the body, but not for the soul. The another place he says that, you know, you're talking about one night stand, even that is there in Savitri. But it's mentioned as that, or heal the loneliness through body closeness, like something like that, exact lines I'm forgetting. So it's a very low kind of an obscure life. It's not about moral judgment on that. But see, this joy and the of mastery, of growing by, you know, restraint, that's something very beautiful in its own right. And it's nothing about morality. It's not because I've committed to one person, therefore I will not. That's not really restraint, because there you are doing it out of social things. But restrained because of the joy of something that you experience. And again, I go back to Indian scripture and why it's so important to expose children to these kind of stories. Very unfortunate nowadays when you speak about mythology. People have told me in Ramayana it's about, what is that called? What is it? Man-oriented and what is that society? Not patriarchy and all that. Big words, you know, you pick up. So I just asked someone. So I was, you know, said, do you know in Ramayana when Sita gives Agni Pariksha, what does he say? You have looked at it as a patriarchy. I'm not even going into symbol. Obviously, it's a symbolic story. Nobody can come across the fire and come alive. I mean, let's face the fact, body is body. I said, do you know what she says? Says, I don't know. I said, see, that's where the catch lies. Sita says before entering the fire, if even in my mind I have not allowed the thought of anyone other than Rama to enter, you know, I get tears in my eyes, goosebumps. Even if in my mind I have never allowed the thought of anyone other than Rama, then may I walk through the fire without it burning. Now look at the poet, to what level he is taking. This is another occasion. where Rama has to do something similar. When people question him, you left Sita and you abandoned and this and that. Then Rama says, I am sitting for the Ashwamedh Yajna. And he makes an image of, he never marries an image of Sita and keeps by the side. And he says, in my thought even, if I have ever entertained anyone other than Sita, so may this not be fruitful. So look at this. This is what restraint is. If you do it out of morality and social conception, it has no meaning at all. It's a facade. It will break down. And it has broken down. In majority of people, it has broken down. But if you do it because you really feel it's, as Nalinida put it, chastity is of the mind. It's not of the body. So how your mind should be beautiful. And when you have that, then it doesn't matter. It's not about sexuality or not sexuality. Your mind should be full of those beautiful thoughts. So since he has passed, I'll just see, read a few lines. Okay, now this is about something else. It's about the provender, but yeah. But if you read this, it's very beautifully. Yeah, okay, we can just read just a few lines. How everything is there. So he says, there are other places also, but I'll read just a few lines from Savitri. It flamed towards heaven, then sank and engulfed towards hell. It climbed to drag down truth into the mire and used for muddy ends its brilliant force. A huge chameleon, gold and blue and red, turning to black and grey and lurid brown, hungry it stared from a mottled bough of life to snap up insect joys, its favourite food, the dingy sustenance of a sumptuous frame, nursing the splendid passion of its use. So it's basically living life like an insect. If you really look at it, it's living life like an insect. But I don't know what is the solution to it, except a growth of consciousness. You can't teach people and train because they are caught in it very badly. And maybe cascading effect would work if more and more, again I come back to youngsters like you, who have understood, felt its sting and given it up. So when people like you do it, it's not about being an example. Nobody may know about it. But the fact that you do it, it has its own inner repercussion on humanity. So more and more. So even as an aside, people often, sometimes they say how many views and they say, you know, today is the Instagram age. So we should not cater to that necessarily. Because very difficult to give truth in that. I mean, it's possible. Say some lines from Savitri you can give or something. But it's not easy. But to cater to that taste. Even when I was editing All India Magazine. So people told me, oh, Shurbindo is very difficult. So why don't you give only mother's writings? I said, no. Because he's difficult, people should read him.
Mm.
So this idea of finding shortcuts to life, it's a package. Whole life is like become a package of performance. Performance, you become a marks, you become, as you said, how many views. So your real identity is lost because you are trying to be somebody else. And I often say that truth takes a very big hit when you seek popularity. So one who seeks popularity is probably very far from seeking truth. You may seek truth and grow, become popular is a different thing, like Shurvindo is, you know, you like. But he didn't seek that. So seek truth rather than popularity. And well, everybody has a right to lead the life the way they want to. But if you lead a life driven by pleasure, then this is at a big expense. It's at the expense of the soul. Of course, people will say, who cares about soul? I have not seen it. There's the choice everybody makes.
I'll just finish with one thing, said that if you don't see it, the problem of not existing. And it hit me 2 days ago when I was observing an echocardiography with somebody. And once you put the echo probe on the heart, then you hear heart sounds that you can't hear with your ears. But it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist inside you. So Nobody will deny that the heart makes noise. Nobody will deny the gut makes noise. But when they hear it, it becomes audible to a sense that, you know, you're not in continuous touch with. So just because people haven't seen something, it just means the instrument's not right. So it's just something that I observed.
That's a very beautiful thing that, well, simply because you have not seen something or you have not experienced, doesn't mean it's not there. And you have to make effort to experience it. But you start with that, well, it could be there. And if it is there, it would change your life completely. So I think that's beautiful. Can I just quickly, this is a beautiful closing point. It's a point I want to make since we are on social media. And it's because people ask often about AI and Aurobindo's writings. And, you know, they asked and they are very happy that it has picked up very nicely, or sometimes it has not picked up. Somebody like me picks on the AI, pick up and say, this is not how it is. But that's not the point. The point is, Aurobindo's writings are there to help us, and Mother's writing, and the writings of all these great ones, the Gita and all, are there to help us evolve spiritually. Now, if you say that, well, AI has picked up all that is written and presented to you, where is your own evolution that comes with effort to discover, to search, to reflect? And that apart, that it has its own limitations, that's a different story. But make an effort. What is there?
There's also such a beauty in just opening a book and suddenly there'll be something that you need in that
book. This easy way out, it's the extension of the bourgeois ideal that I want an easy way out in everything. So I suppose that's one of the banes of this. It has its own advantages. But in the closing, all that I would say is, see, people often say, no, we are using a media to spread. See, again I go back to that. Vedic rishis had no media at their disposal. Nor was the Gita recorded on a tape recorder. Even Aurobindo and the Mother writings, it was not like on social media platforms. But they have reached, and they do their magic and do their work. So we need to understand that there is a power which exists in silence. And this world is woven with threads of consciousness that exist whether we see them or not. And even if none documents your thoughts or reads your thought, yet the thoughts have a power and they are affecting the world in ways beyond what we can imagine. So these thoughts which are generated through the social media and picked up by the young mind, vulnerable minds, and they are circulating in the atmosphere, we should understand that it's in the thought world creating a big barricade against the light and truth. And the way to fight it is by generating beautiful thoughts. I think what Buddha said long back still holds true, and Mother also spoke of that. Send every day beautiful thoughts to the world. No media will document it. No social media will know it. But this will go very powerfully and fight in the world this battle of darkness with light. There is a very nice line in Savitri with which probably we can close. A lonely thought becomes omnipotent. Okay, so thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jai Ma.